welcome to another episode of Strewn Along the Path. This time we're going to talk about another superhero TV show that's been out there. And this one aired on Hulu. So this is not the Netflix queue. It was a Hulu original. So it's not part of the Marvel Netflix series, you know, with Daredevil and Jessica Jones and Luke Cage. It's its own thing. It's a different show. But it's based on a Marvel comic book. This is Runaways, which this is a comic book I haven't read. I've heard a lot about the series. You know, I've heard that it's really good and people praise it, but I've never read it. It wasn't when I was following comics very well. But I've seen references to it, but I never really knew what the deal was, what the comic book was all about. Okay, here's what I knew. It was about a bunch of kids with powers that had supervillains for parents, and that they run away from home because they want to get away from their supervillain parents. That's kind of the gist that I got from what I've heard about Runaways. I don't know how accurate the TV show is versus what's in the comic book. I'm sure all the characters and their names and the general idea of the characters and the direction is from the comic book, but I'm sure there's differences as well in the show. But all I know is the show, so don't fault me for not understanding everything from the comic books. It is quite different from other series. You know, this isn't a superhero team. This isn't them against the world. This is them just trying to survive in their life. And the show stayed very true to the age group that it was. Well, I don't know what age group it was necessarily focused on demographically, but as far as the characters being teenagers in high school, it really stuck to that. And, you know, their motivations and the things that they do and the struggles that they have seemed pretty real as far as comic book TV shows go. Or, you know, shows in general, I think they stay true to the age of the characters, if that makes any sense to you. If you're not familiar with Runaways, which, you know, I don't think a lot of people are unless you're really into comic books and read it during the time that it came out. You know, I don't know the demographics of the people that listen to this podcast, if anybody does. A lot of times I feel like I'm just talking to myself out here. And that's okay. I can do that. And sorry, yes, I am on the road again. It seems to be the best time for me when I have time to just sit and record something. So there is road noise. Right now the noise isn't too bad, but we might be getting into some roads that cause more noise coming up later in the episode. So I'm sorry about that. Maybe someday I'll be a real podcaster. But let's go down the cast list. There's a lot going on in this show. There's a lot of characters. There's a lot of people. I mean, so you have a group of like seven kids. I will go down it here in a minute. But then you also have their parents all their parents are involved in the story. And you have some other side characters that are involved. So it's quite the ensemble show, and it's about the kids, but it's also about their parents, and it's quite interesting and different than what, you know, the kind of shows that I've watched before. Usually it's either a single superhero type character or a group of characters getting together, but this is really quite complex in all the different characters and how they interact, and it's also unique in the power sets that they have. This isn't a bunch of mutant kids. This isn't a group of Avengers getting together. It's unique, and I think that's why it succeeded as a comic book, and I think succeeded as a show. I quite enjoyed it. So let's go down this. I'm gonna go just. It's kind of a cast list, so I'll cover the actors, but I don't know any of the actors from anything. So I'll give you the actor and the character, and a little bit about each of them. Again, I'm avoiding the episode-by-episode synopsis. I'll probably give you the basic premise, you know, maybe the first couple episodes, and then you know, just go into things that I liked about it or things that were unique. So here's the cast list. We have Renzi Felice as Alex Wilder. And I guess if you could call anybody a leader of the Runaways, Alex would be the leader. It's interesting. He has no powers. He's just a regular kid, but he's pretty smart, and he kind of has, you know, the ability to lead, I guess. He's not always trusted, but generally he is. You know, he's I guess you consider him a nerd. He's African-American. The reason all these kids know each other is because their parents belong to this organization called the Pride, which is kind of set up to look like, you know, a business venture. They all work together for purposes. But the next character that's on here is the actress Larica O'Connell. And she plays Nico Minuro. And I'm probably getting that wrong. She's kind of a self-proclaimed Wiccan character, you know, which believes in spells and the earth and kind of the old witchcraft kind of thing. Well, it's kind of the Wiccan religion or whatever. So, and so she, you know, she kind of wears the goth type clothes, you know, black makeup, black clothes, that kind of thing. And she's an interesting character. Her sister died 2 years ago. And since then, because all the kids were friends because their parents, you know, got together for meetings and things for the Pride. And so the kids kind of grew up together and they were friends. But a lot of things changed when Nico's sister, Amy, died, apparently of suicide. But she died like 2 years ago. And since then, the kids kind of don't get together anymore. It was kind of a catastrophic thing for their friendship, I think for their parents as well. So Nico's parents are having a hard time in their marriage and their family isn't together. It's all, you know, about the sister's death, and everybody in Nico's family is still focused on that, which, you know, is understandable. That's quite a catastrophic thing to happen in a family, and lots of things can fray because of that. So, you know, being a Wiccan, her mother has this staff. I believe it's called the Staff of One, and it has magical properties tied to, I don't know what you call it. There's a thing on the staff that pricks you, and through the bloodline, basically the staff can do things that you want it to do. You know, it's like a magic staff. And so this kind of goes along with the Wiccan and the spells kinds of thing. And it belongs to her mother, and she keeps it in a framed, locked framed case. And eventually Nico obtains the staff and is able to use it as well. And so that's kind of her power, is using this staff. And again, hopefully as we go through this, this can kind of come together and make sense. But I just wanted to give you an idea of everybody's kind of powers and where they come from and this kind of thing. Okay, so the next character here is played by Virginia Gardner. And she plays the character of Carolina Dean. And Carolina Dean, her parents, or at least mostly her mother, has created this kind of New Age religion. It's called the Church of Gaborim. And, you know, people that I've known or people that I've heard talk about this series that have lived in L.A., you know, they see this as, oh, yeah, this is, they're very familiar with this kind of New Age church kind of thing. It's kind of a cult of personality or networking type church, or I don't know what you call it. But anyway, New Age religion called the Church of Gaborim. And so her mother's like one of the main leaders of this church. And her father is involved, but not quite as much. And she's always kind of grown up with that. And she has this bracelet that she's always had as kind of symbolism of her faith. And at one point, she ends up taking off the bracelet, or the bracelet falls off. And she starts to glow, like kind of these rainbow colors, she notices. And she puts the bracelet back on, but then she's kind of exhausted and passes out. And that leads into a plot point, but I'll get back to that in a minute. Well, but eventually, Carolina learns that she can also fly or levitate due to these powers, and she can put out energy. You know, she can use this energy and expel it from her, you know, either as a weapon or a show of force or whatever. It's kind of the first superhero type power that is expressed in this. And the next character here in the cast list is played by Ariella Bearer, and she plays the character of Gert Yorks. And she plays kind of this feminist, activist, person, and she's, you know, always trying to start things for causes or a feminist group or things like that at the school. And she has purple hair. And I thought her character was done really well. I liked her character quite a bit. I thought she was maybe the most real of all the characters. I don't know if that's due to the writing or to the acting, probably both. She's the one I related to the most as a character in the story. She felt the most real. And I don't know if you call this a superpower, but this is kind of the random stuff. Her parents have created, it doesn't really explain how they did it, but they have a dinosaur in their basement. They're scientists. They have a lot of things, different things going on, but apparently they created and have raised this dinosaur in their, it's kind of like a velociraptor kind of thing. They don't really say what kind of a dinosaur it is, but it's kind of the height and the structure of a velociraptor, probably not quite as vicious or whatever. But anyway, so it's a dinosaur. And it's become accustomed to Gert's voice. You know, she sings and things like that in her bedroom, and it's quieted by her voice. And so she has the ability to command this dinosaur to do what she wants. It'll listen to her. It'll do what she says. And it's kind of an interesting relationship that she develops with this dinosaur, her pet dinosaur. And again, I mean, that's kind of a strange thing to see. You don't expect that, I guess. I mean, you know, I guess you have the Moon Girl and Devil Dinosaur, or Moon Boy and Devil Dinosaur, depending on which rendition you have that in Marvel. So I guess it's been done before, but this is done a little bit differently. I mean, it's just kind of different. You know, all of these characters are different, and I think that's pretty cool. And I think I'm going to jump down to her sister. I guess it's her foster sister, her sister that was adopted into their family. And she's a Hispanic girl, and her name, the actress is Allegra Acosta. She plays Molly Hernandez, and she's kind of Gert's younger sister. Not that much younger, probably, I don't know, 3 years younger. She is the youngest member of this group. And Molly's parents were killed. They used to be members of the Pride, and I'll just go ahead and spoil it. They were killed because they were going to try to leave the Pride and get away from everything. And so her parents were killed, but she was exposed to these glowing rocks. I don't know if they were extraterrestrial rocks or what these rocks were. I can't remember if it explains it really in the story, but they had possession of these. So basically they were caught in an explosion, and Molly was there, but she was preserved by these rocks. And so she starts to learn, as the story starts, when she gets really angry or upset, she gets super strength, and she can push heavy things out of the way or, you know, punch through walls or whatever. But she ends up having this super strength when she's agitated. And over the course of the series, she kind of figures out how to control it. But she also gets super tired after she uses her superpowers. So she's probably the most like what you'd consider in a comic book, you know, like a mutant. She's an adolescent and she's getting superpowers. But of course, she's not a mutant. She got this from these mystery rocks is where she got her powers from. So she's not a mutant, but she's gaining these superpowers. The next member of the Runaways is a boy. He's kind of the jock of the group, and he's played by Greg Sulkin and Chase Stein, is the character's name. And he's kind of a regular kid. His father is an inventor. And so he's kind of tinkering around. And he creates these like power gloves. Kind of like Iron Man gloves, I guess. But they don't have like the ability to fly or repulsors or anything like that. But, you know, they do have great strength and power, you know, comes from them. So if you're wearing these power gloves, I thought it was interesting as I was watching the show. I thought they were calling him the Fists of the Gods or Fist of Gods or something like that. But I guess they were calling him, based on reading the material on it, they are called Fistigons. Which, I don't know, I kind of like Fist of the Gods better. But anyway, so he doesn't start out with these, but he's kind of tinkering with these gloves in his father's lab. And eventually his father helps him out with them, and they create these power glove things that he uses. And so, and again, they're not forming a superhero team where they're going to go fight crime. They're just regular kids, and they have these different things that are happening. So, again, all kind of unique things. This isn't the typical kind of comic book thing, and it's kind of cool. So, their parents. So, like I said, each of their parents belongs to this organization called the Pride. And, you know, on the surface, it looks like it's this group that came together to build kind of a corporate, you know, the different resources together. I can't think of the name that I'm trying to go for. You know, kind of like a foundation or a business group that they pool their resources together and are able to do different things, you know, have goals or whatever. And so Victor Stein, who's Chase's father, is an inventor, like I said, and he invents things. And then you have, what is it, the Yorks, that are the scientists, and they provide a lot of scientific analysis and medicines and things like that. And then the Wilders are, his dad owns real estate and has a lot of different real estate ventures and business construction things, type things. Let's see what else. Well, the Hernandezes were part of it. I can't remember what their specialty was, but they were killed eventually. Oh, and I guess Carolina's mom, as leader of the church, you know, has a lot of influence, has a lot of money, I guess, tied in, and I get, you know, kind of a spiritual center for the group. I don't know how you would profound that, but everybody in the Pride kind of does their part for this business ventures or this foundation called the Pride. And like I said, that's on the surface, but behind it, and in the first episode, Alex kind of gets all the kids together because their parents are having a meeting at his house, at Alex's house. And so he wants to get all the kids together. You know, they've kind of grown apart. You know, Chase is the jock, kind of does the jock thing. Carolina is a little bit of an outcast because she's, you know, this religious person. She's following that path. And then, anyway, they've kind of grown apart. But Alex wants to get them together. And so they eventually all end up at his house. And they're just kind of chatting. And they're like, this is kind of awkward and weird. And I can't remember what sparked it. But they eventually went into another part of the house and found a hidden door, a hidden entryway. So they go down the stairs and around this area. And they look down into this area. And their parents are all dressed in these red robes. It's kind of a strange ritualistic thing going on. And they bring this girl out. And Carolina knows this girl from the church. She recently became a member of the church. And, you know, she was homeless or whatever and needed help. And the church was helping her. And so her mother had kind of taken her under her wing. But we come to find out that the plan is to sacrifice this girl. And so they put her in this capsule, I guess you could say. You know, they kind of drug her up and say that she's going to go ultra, which is like the, you know, a level of membership or, you know, spirituality for the church. Several people have gone ultra And so she's going to go ultra, which is kind of how they got her involved in this. And so they put her in the capsule, and they do, you know, the Victor does something, and it glows with light, and like it's like she's disappeared. She's gone. Like, they've killed her. And the kids are, like, freaking out. They can't figure out what their parents are involved in. You know, as the audience, we're kind of like, what's going on here? And then the younger girl, Molly, takes a picture with her cell phone. But, of course, the parents see the flash. And the kids run upstairs, and, you know, they're like, holy crap. And they eventually, they're able to talk themselves out of it, that, you know, they didn't see anything. They made it look like the power went out in the house, kind of thing. And so the parents aren't suspicious of them anymore. That's kind of the first episode of the series. And then as the series goes on, you know, we learn more about the relationships with the kids' relationships develop together, you know, with each other. And you get to see how the parents interact with their children and how the parents interact with each other. And like I say, you learn a lot of things as you go along the way. And it's kind of interesting to see all these different relationships and kind of see the history of how the pride came together and, you know, what it's all about, what the sacrifice is about. And it takes, I don't know, 4 or 5 episodes before you really kind of figure out what's going on with the pride. Why are they doing these sacrifices? What the heck's going on? There's this old man in a bed somewhere at the church headquarters, and he's just this wrinkled corpse, or he's not a corpse, but, you know, he's just very wrinkled. Looks like he's going to die at any moment. Can barely talk or move. And it's kind of like, what the heck is going on? Come to find out that the capsule or whatever that was supposed to eviscerate the young girls as a sacrifice didn't work. And Victor kind of tries to get away with it, and he kind of kills the girl anyway and dumps her. So, I mean, as I'm talking about this, you can tell it's kind of a dark tone, right? And we're talking about sacrificing kids. We're talking about some weird things going on. So it is pretty dark, but it's very intriguing, you know, from the first episode, and you kind of figure things out. And all of the kids have different issues and things they're trying to work through. And there's kind of an interplay with different relationships between the characters, you know, love interests versus prior experiences with each other, as well as kind of new emerging things. And so that's kind of interesting. And again, that kind of stays true to this. And you know, they kind of get together at high school and talk about things, and you can kind of see their high school life and the pluses and minuses, even though with all this other stuff going on, they go to school every day. And there's a school dance at one point that they use as a cover to sneak around and do things. And I don't know how much to reveal. I guess one thing that you do learn, and again, if you don't, there's spoilers here if you don't want to know about it. But you find out that the sacrifices, because they eventually do another sacrifice, and the sacrifices give life to this figure that was laying on the bed. And eventually he comes back, you know, fully revived again. And he's played by, I didn't go through all the actors as the parents, but mainly it focuses on the kids, even though the parents are a big part of the show. But anyway, this is a character called Jonah, and he's played by Julian McMahon. And if you don't know who that is, he played Dr. Doom in the first 2 Fantastic Four movies. You know, he's the reason that Dr. Doom didn't have a mask, because they wanted him as an actor to act and to express himself, so they didn't put the mask on him for both of those movies. But anyway, so just basing his acting abilities on the Fantastic Four movies, you wouldn't think much about him. But I've seen him in other things, and he does a good job in this one. And he kind of plays the mastermind behind this whole, and he's lived for many, many years. I mean, I don't know what the whole story is there, but he's able to be revived by these sacrifices and take the life force of these other people. He's not really a vampire, but I guess that's kind of vampirific, if that's a word. So he adds a lot of interest to the show, and he's kind of the main threat. not only to the children, but to the parents as well. And, you know, he's got dirt on them. That's why he's able to keep them in line and keep them in the pride. And, you know, he's a pretty foreboding character. Maybe at the end I'll go over the rest of the cast list of who the parents are played by. I don't know if that matters to you. But let's see. Without going through the whole plot, I guess what are some things that stood out? I guess, again, I really thought the kids did a good job of acting, especially some of them. And I thought the writing was really good. It kept them as high school kids with high school concerns and interests. You know, there's family dynamics going on, which, of course, goes on in every teen's life. Well, maybe not quite to the extent that we have here with parents killing people and having their own superpowers or whatever. But it's a lot different than what I was expecting. You know, when I heard supervillains, I thought the typical comic book supervillains. And my daughter likes to watch the show Descendants, which is like the children of the Disney supervillain characters. You know, you have, I don't know, the Evil Queen's daughter and the Captain, I don't know. I don't keep up with it. But anyway, you know, like Maleficent's son, or I don't know who the Descendants are. But anyway, it's the descendants of these Disney bad guys. And I guess there's some drama there. So that's kind of what I was expecting. Like, you have these supervillains as the parents, and then this is their young kids, and they have superpowers too. No, it's totally different than that. It's totally unique and more real to life, if you count dinosaurs and power gloves and Wiccan staffs and glowing flying people as down to earth. But it really is. And all these characters are interesting, and just the relationships that play out, you know, it's done in a really interesting way. And you're expecting them to come together all as one, you know, with all their superpowers and to fight. And that does kind of happen in a couple instances, but it's not like other superhero things. Maybe it wasn't a comic book, I don't know. You know, at one point Alex gets kidnapped and they all kind of come together to save him, using their different powers and abilities. Eventually the parents find out that the kids know everything, and you know, the whole time the kids are trying to find more evidence and dig in and find out what their parents are really up to. And some of them believe it, some of them don't. Some of them, you know, there's got to be a reason. You know, they love their parents. And so there's a lot of sympathetic things going on with the parents and with the kids. And it's really hard to talk about without going through all the plot points. But hopefully you get a good sense of the differentness of this show and kind of what you're looking at as far as the content. And hopefully you're intrigued to go watch it. At first, I kind of thought, oh, this is a little dark, and I don't know if I want to get into this, you know, like I get into other things. But I also kind of felt a sense of, well, I've been talking about all these other superhero shows, all these other comic book TV shows that have been coming up and keep coming up. So I might as well just keep on going, watch them, review them here on the podcast, and, you know, at least let people know what they're about if they want to check in. There's so many superhero shows now that it's really kind of hard to figure out what you might want to watch, especially if you're more of a casual watcher, which I have been up till this point. But now it's like I'm on a mission to watch all these different superhero shows and talk about them. So hopefully you get something out of it. You know, there's a lot of Netflix Marvel stuff that's come up that I haven't talked about. I didn't talk about Punisher, or even Jessica Jones just came out with the second season. So I haven't talked about those. I'll get to those back eventually, I guess. I haven't talked about Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. for a while. I haven't talked about the CW series for a while. They have a new one, you know, Black Lightning, and Cloak and Dagger's coming out in June. And just lots of stuff going on for TV. Now, here's what else I heard. I thought, okay, I got this handled. I can figure this out. And then I heard that DC now is going to start their own streaming service. And they're going to have like a Teen Titans live action show. And they're going to have a Swamp Thing show. And they're going to have, I can't remember what else, but like three or four, even more shows from the DC universe on this new DC streaming service. I'm like, oh, come on, man. I'm just barely able to keep up with what's going on. So I don't know. We'll see about that. Maybe I'll have to get some donations or something like that if people want me to review this DC streaming services shows, because, you know, that's just another streaming service to subscribe to in order to see these different shows and talk about them. And again, I get nothing for this, so, you know, I don't know how much it's really worth it, how much people are really listening, but I'll just talk about what I talk about. And I do recommend Runaways. It's a different type of show, and it's pretty interesting. It's not the same old, you know. It's not like another Flash or another Arrow. It's something different, and that's kind of good in this current slate of so many different comic book shows that are out there. So hopefully I've piqued your interest. Hopefully you take a look at it, and I'll be back here talking about something else later on. So yeah, I'll be back at some point. And we'll see what else is strewn along the path.
The Journey Into Podcast is produced under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives License.